Hey, buddy, I'm not paying you to hear your thoughts on life.
Well, I have a microphone, and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Welcome to Season 3 of the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that unpacks and dissects the strategies and principles of high performance in sports and business. I'm your host, Alan Stein Jr. In this season, I lean on several of the most innovative and impactful leaders I know to garner their wisdom on how to effectively lead during times of adversity, how to remain poised during a crisis, and how to look for and capitalize on new opportunities. While these Zoom recordings took place during the height of the coronavirus pandemic, the tips, strategies, and principles shared are timeless and can be applied to any future challenge. They also have very high utility. The wisdom dropped can and should be applied to any line of work, in any industry, in any organization. For additional resources on improving performance, leadership, and culture, please check out allensteinjr.com/free. Follow me at Alan Stein Jr. on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and opt in to receive my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. Today, I chop it up with Keith Gerson, the president of franchise operations for FranConnect and the author of The Franchise Book of Mentors. How are you, buddy?
You're looking good.
Yes, you are as well. What's going on?
Oh, well, let's see. When you ask the question, what's going on or how's somebody doing? It's a loaded question. Three answers. So I am healthy. So check.
Yes.
I'm emotionally in a good place. Check. I'm gainfully employed. Check. All of my kids and grandkids are doing great. Life is good.
My goodness. You're batting 1,000 right there. That sounds like 4 for 4.
I am indeed. How about you?
I think I can check all of the same boxes, which I'm incredibly thankful for as well. Amen. Although I guess for a keynote speaker, the gainfully employed, it just depends on how you look at it. You know, I'm technically an unemployed keynote speaker at present, but I'm not worried that I'm going to furlough myself. I'm pretty sure I'll be back on a stage one day.
Well, I would imagine, though, you've got a virtual stage with limitless, you know, incredibly scalable audiences.
Oh, yeah. You know what I've noticed so far, I think, and this has just been my experience, and I know that every speaker is having a slightly different experience. I think for the last several weeks, a lot of event planners and meeting planners have been kind of on hold, waiting to see when they think the earliest available time to get back in front of a live audience will be. And I think some of them thought that was going to potentially be this summer. And now it's probably looking like more like fall, maybe late fall. And then I know some have even decided to wait until 2021. But now that they've got kind of that mindset, I do think over the next couple months, I'm going to see an increase in virtual business because some folks don't want to wait until 2021 to pour into their people. I think they've all just, it's been a waiting game at this point. But I think I'm going to see some good virtual opportunities in the next month and a half.
Well, for sure. And for whatever it's worth, you know, I continue to do thought leadership and I put together content and attract some really good speakers. And I've had some amazing numbers, the like I've never seen before. I think people are really hungry for insight. People were initially focused just on COVID-19 and, you know, the impacts and the woe is me and the denial aspects. And now they're all coming out of it and they're thinking in terms of, okay, what do I do and how do I go about reopening? Yes. So I'm attracting numbers that, you know, in the last 3 weeks, I've had thousands, without exaggeration, thousands of franchisors and franchisees that are showing up for these things.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Well, I think that's a great place for us to start. You know, the way I've been looking at it, this pendulum obviously swung maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago with kind of the quarantine and the social distancing and non-essential businesses shutting down. And most folks have been continuing to learn the new normal and pivot into that. But as you just so mentioned with great insight, that pendulum's going to swing in another direction pretty soon. And that's, how are you going to adjust and be prepared when things go back to whatever the new normal is going to be? So talk a little bit about that, you know, from either a franchisor or a franchisee's perspective on what they should be doing to prepare for the pendulum to come back.
It's an interesting question because we're all in the same storm, but in franchising, we're not all in the same boat. So there is a very asymmetrical reality that franchisors are facing, even within the same systems, because you might have franchisees that are in one state with a very different set of criteria for reopening than you have within the same system in another state. So some of the things that franchisors have to be thinking about today, business leaders in general, anybody with a distributed audience, is where and how do I allow and effectively keep my franchisees apprised or my distributed locations apprised of what the rules of engagement are, and how do I make sure that my franchisees are educating their people. So this is really now a time in which technology takes on even greater levels of importance now that you have distributed workforces and less ability to be able to touch franchisees. As it stands right now, according to the data and the survey information that I collect, before the pandemic, franchisees were only seeing their franchisees between once and twice per year. From a performance standpoint, you know, it's a very, very different world where we will be in which all of the coaching and consulting really by and large has to be done with the advents of distance technologies and learning management systems, abilities to be able to have franchisees self-audit, you know, the ability to be able to have real-time access and information to checklists that are constantly evolving. So I guess the first answer to that question is to really get a handle on the realities of working with virtual teams and making sure that we have the ability to be able to overcome not just the physical distance, but that we also have to be thinking in terms of the strategic distance, you know, and where and how do we get aligned on those objectives? And what about, you know, again, the operational distance and the agility, which is speaking to what I was talking about, the tools to be able to embrace and adopt at this time.
Oh, absolutely. Well, so it sounds like, all right, so if we've got kind of the pre-COVID-19 folks, they had their business models and their ways of operating, and they had their touch points with their franchisees. And then obviously post-COVID-19, the period we're in right now, has flipped all of that upside down, and we've all had to kind of make do with the parameters that are set. But I would guess on some level, the smart businesses are evaluating which of those systems and operations and things they were doing before can and should be tweaked moving forward. I think there's going to be some groups that say, hey, there's actually something to these digital touch points. Maybe we should be doing more of these even once the restrictions have been lifted. So do you see a lot of groups, and are you advising a lot of groups to really take this time to reflect on evaluating best practices moving forward?
Well, there's no question that that we need that. And now more than ever, we need to create again that level of engagement with our teams and ability to be able to collect real-time information in terms of what's working and what's not working. You know, Alan, one of the really interesting things that happened during this period of time is that it has been an opportunity for some real brainstorming, if you will, and role storming, in which people are now saying, I've got business models that I didn't even know existed before. You know, people that I know that are, for example, in education that were doing face-to-face tutoring that now have gone to and been able to figure out where and how to more effectively scale their businesses. So now it's a matter of making sure that systems in some places that were put together in a matter of days and were working in certain operations throughout that system now have a means to be able to be brought together with, you know, operational standards behind them and where and how we get those things out into the hands of our the balance of our franchisees with proof and evidence that these things were actually working. So I think that there's a lot of changes and a lot of ways of doing business that are no longer going to be germane. And new ways that clearly have to be documented and distributed to the network.
And I look at that as a good thing. It's kind of like clearing the weeds out and to constantly self-evaluate what things are working well so we can do more of those and what things weren't working as well so we can either tweak or trim the fat. And I mean, I think that's what businesses should be doing all of the time. But during a pandemic like this, it almost forces us to look internally. I love that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was having a conversation with a franchisor who is a founder of one of the leading QSR segments. And, mm-hmm. and I'll save the name for the time being, but I think your listeners would recognize who the brand is. And this guy really was had a very unique way of looking at this as really having been a cathartic cleansing experience. That here was somebody that had to come to terms with the fact that he had originally intended to be able to put together, you know, the best team imaginable and to actually do more with less, that there were efficiencies that he realized. But he came to find out that instead of having, you know, a technology-driven franchise with less people, he ended up going in the other direction. And this became really an opportunity for him to be able to do some house cleaning. You know, that he was frankly holding on to lower performers that he really shouldn't have. And I guess that's one of the real cathartic things when one is facing the fact that your revenues are falling faster than your expenses are. And it caused people to go in there and really start self-evaluating. Is this really essential for my business? And I think that by and large, franchisors that are embracing this and not seeing it as, you know, the horrific set of circumstances that it has been, but are also now coming out of this saying that maybe this was the best thing that could have happened to my business. You know, because now I'm disciplining, I'm executing at a higher level. I have to, because in some cases I have less employees on my team, but the ones I have, they really are contributors. So
I love that. I love the word cathartic. You know, it is, it's a time to reset. It's a time to pause. You know, one of many reasons that I've always had such admiration and respect for you is that you have a sense of optimism and poise no matter what's going on. And you use the word opportunity a couple of times. And I like that because there's no question the negative effects that something like this is having. I mean, we do see it daily and are bombarded by it on the news. But with any crisis, there is going to be opportunity. And this mindset that the businesses that pivoted most effectively and efficiently when this first happened are the ones that are winning right now. And then the ones that will make that same acclamation on the other end will be the ones that win there. And winning just doesn't necessarily mean you're more profitable than you were last year during the same time. It just means you're making progress and your business is moving forward. So I would assume that mindset that you have of looking for opportunity at all times is served you well, even when there's not a crisis?
Well, it is. You know, I used to play this mental game with myself where I would, at the end of the week, a business week, and I've done this for years, I would fire myself on Friday. I would literally tell myself or convince myself that I was no longer, because I remembered that the most effective I ever was, the most I ever listened, the most I really was objective to what was happening in a business was when I came in with a brand new set of eyes. Mm. So I left an organization, I joined a new one. I felt like I was, you know, executing at the highest levels ever. So I fire myself on Fridays, I rehire myself on Mondays and basically say, well, that poor, you know, guy that was here before, he was a little out of touch. So it caused me and causes me to really challenge the things that I even have been doing as recently as just the week prior and as to whether or not that's the best practice. And let me also say, having done what I do for over 40 years now, well over 40 years, I always tell myself that the audience who hears that is probably thinking to themselves, is it 40 years or is it 1 year repeated 40 times? And every day I wake up, I have to think about where and how I can be more relevant and contribute at higher levels than I have in the past. So I challenge myself, and I've heard you speak, I've read your book, and I understand and appreciate that the highest achievers are the guys that come early, stay late, you know, are really never satisfied, even when they are considered top-tier performers. Many of these guys have coaches that they'll bring in on their own. I mean, you know, the story of Tiger Woods, you know, having and wanting to challenge himself to change up his swing, you know, and go from right to left and whatnot was inspirational, though, you know, I don't have the amount of great sports analogies that that you have, but certainly seems to be applicable in my life.
No, it most certainly does. When you rehired yourself each Monday, did you negotiate a raise each time, or how did
that Haven't figured that part out yet.
That'd be quite a tug of war. No, I love that. But you said some really good stuff there, and I you know, it times like this should hopefully spark innovation and spark creativity. You know, I mean, and this goes all the way down to the personal level. You know, if someone found themselves kind of in a routine of, you know, I go and take a couple yoga classes each week, and then I go by the gym and kind of do the same thing, and now they can't. And if physical fitness is still really important to them, well, they're going to have to get creative and innovative and say, okay, what types of workouts can I do at home? You know, is there something online that I can follow? Is there something I have around the house that I could use as kind of makeshift equipment? So, you know, almost when change is forced upon us, it forces creativity and innovation. And I find that the highest performers and highest achievers, they don't wait for that to be imposed on them. They're constantly in that mindset, and they are never satisfied with the question of, well, that's the way it's always been done. And that sounds like what you're saying here is constantly looking inside, firing yourself and saying, okay, what do I have to do to level up and get rehired again on Monday? And then what new skill sets and mindsets can I bring to the table? And I think that's a good practice for all of us to have well after, you know, COVID-19 is in the rearview mirror.
Yeah. I completely agree. And anyone who knows me knows that I somehow go about and pick up, and I don't mean to do this, but I've become the king of cliches, and I incorporate these truisms, et cetera. But one that sticks with me in this moment is that there's only one way to coast, and that's downhill.
Mm. So true. I like cliches. Yeah, I don't think cliches are bad. I think if it's gotten to the point where it's cliche, it's been around so long that it's valid. There's got to be some truth behind it. And I like
so.
That because it is, it's all life and sport and business is all about momentum, you know, and there were groups that probably had some really nice momentum in January and February, and then found that coming to a screeching halt through no fault of their own. And now they've got to figure out ways, how do we regenerate momentum in the short term, but most importantly in the long term. I mean, one thing I believe everyone agrees upon is at some point this will pass. We don't know when,
that's
and
right.
That's probably what makes most people really uncomfortable.
You're
but
right.
At some point, this will pass, just like 9/11 passed, just like the 2007 and 8 recession. And what are we going to do moving forward? How can we ensure that when we come out of this, our franchise and our franchisees are stronger and better equipped than they've ever been? And that's all about that preparation, right?
Well, that's right. Yeah, you'll get a big amen out of me on that. You know, one of the things you talked about was my eternal optimism.
Yes.
And the fact that this is really my my default operating style. But I think I've probably just learned over the years, and this is going to be particularly important during a pandemic or a crisis of any type, which is right now is a time as leaders, we all have an obligation to exude, if you will, confidence and absorb fear.
Mm.
And that absorbing fear part is really important because, you know, you're right. I've been around long enough to know, and I've been through my fair share of recessions and catastrophes and, you know, what we used to call the, you know, Black Friday, where something has happened and, you know, we're on our heels trying to figure out how to get through something. You know, that it's just really important for us now to recognize that this too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to really be spending a lot of time right now in the war room in terms of planning and making sure that we're really, really clear and intentional in terms of conveying what's important right now. And that business as usual, there's nothing usual about this time. You know, I heard people say, well, you know, back in 08, when we went through this recession, this is what I learned. Let me say, there's no question that this is like every recession you could possibly imagine and every event rolled into to one.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's the absence of leadership at this moment in time that in the absence of that, people are going to fill in the blanks, and they're typically doing it with fear, and they've picked up little innuendos here and there, and it's going to crush their ability to be able to return strong.
Yeah.
Right now, I think from my optimistic vantage point that we could be coming out of this way stronger than when we went into this. I know right now that there's never, ever been a better time in terms of recruitment for those.
Mm-hmm.
When we start coming out of this.
Yeah.
There are some of the best people I know in the business, unfortunately, got released from jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And were furloughed. and they're looking for opportunities right now. I know that one of the things that was stalling out franchise growth in terms of franchise sales was the fact that we were in a full employment economy.
Yeah.
And when people, you know, have the golden calf, you know, they're getting paid premiums and everyone who wants to work is working, you know, that was not really a conducive time for growing new locations. But right now you have so many people, unfortunately, that are out of work. I think the last count I heard this last week was 27 million
and
unemployment levels that are the lowest going back to 1940. That right now people have lost a lot of their confidence in the job market. They know that employees are expendable. Even the best of employees are expendable. And so now these people are going to be out there looking for new opportunities. And it could be great because there's a lot of franchise systems out there that are faring very well.
You know, of course,
people used to say recession proof. Let me tell you, we're seeing businesses right now that are thriving that are pandemic proof.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good opportunities to be had also for people coming in. And so, I mean, we can make this whatever we want, but if you think it's going to be nothing but tragedy and bad results and crushed margins, et cetera, it probably will be. But if you come out of this saying, what are the things that I can be doing right now?
Yes.
The most important things that are going to be able to help make me incrementally take these small but smart steps forward, we can come out of this way stronger.
And for sure.
There are plenty that are doing that.
Well, and this is actually a man of gift. We're going to share an optimistic framework. This is the best time to practice effective leadership and communication and team cohesion. You know, that's kind of the whole point. It's easy to lead when things are going well, and it's easy to communicate when you have every resource possible and you can see your team whenever you want. So this, I think, is a time for us all to sharpen our swords and improve these different skill sets. One area that I really want to chat with you about. So there's two things that impress me in this world. One is high performance, but two is longevity. And the fact that you've been a high performer, and I don't mean this to show your age, I mean this with respectfully, about as long as I've been alive. I mean, that is phenomenal at a super, super high level. I'd love to hear your thoughts on not just how you manage acute stress, but how you've prevented yourself from getting stagnant and complacent over a nice long career. But most importantly, how have you somehow managed to avoid burnout, or have you experienced it at different times? Because I think to do anything at a high level for multiple decades is just beyond impressive.
I've been very blessed. I love what I do. And I think at the center of this whole question is, are you doing what you really enjoy? And I do. I wake up every single morning and I've never ever felt like it's a chore, and I never ever thought of it as work. I mean, some people really enjoy golfing, et cetera. For me, this is sport. Mm-hmm. It really is. I love what I do. You would be aware of this, but your listeners wouldn't necessarily know that I've also been a professional musician my whole life. And there's a lot that I've derived from being a musician in terms of, we talked about catharticism here.
Yeah.
It's cathartic for me with music that I can express myself, but I also learned that it's a great common denominator. You know, people can all rally around, you know, the music they love and the messaging in songs, etc. So I have used music even in my business, in which I've organized, you know, the franchise, you know, all-star band and different things here, which, you know, we've entertained. But for me, I get to express myself, which is one of the ways that I alleviate stress when it happens. I'm not stress-free. And I don't want to paint this portrayal that it's, you know, that I love every moment of every day, because,
of course,
you know, I'm having to have some very difficult conversations with people that have been very, very adversely impacted in their businesses, you know, and you hear enough of those, it can really wear you down a little bit. So so I also use meditation in my life. I am always cognizant, if you will, of my breathing. And to keep myself fresh, I remember there was this little pamphlet that came out many, many years ago called Bits and Pieces. It was almost like just a little throwaway comic book for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
But it was little truisms and it was those cliches and all these things, you know, about business. And there was one thing that I read that really stayed with me, which was, it said that if somebody were to study the topic, choose a one singular topic, and study that topic for 30 minutes every day for 1 year. At the end of that 1 year, they would be considered an expert at that topic, a world-class expert on that topic. I thought a 30-minute a day, and I chose behavioral management as the topic that I was most interested in, and specifically leadership and communications aspects. So I continued to learn. I continued to read. I have a Audible subscription, and I listen to books. I read books, but I also listen to books, and probably knock out 3 books a week. Wow. With the advent of Audible, and I can choose it. And sometimes those books I'm reading are self-improvement. Sometimes those are business functions. Sometimes they're just distractions, you know. But I've also found that that's another great denominator. And it gives me more to add, if you will, to my narrative and to the way I'm able to communicate things that may be a little different than how other leaders communicate. And of course, authenticity is really, really important throughout this whole thing. And so it's important to me just to remain my own true self, no matter what the circumstances are. And also remember that I don't take anything personal. Usually if I'm dealing with somebody that is reacting in unfavorable ways, you know, something that could get under my skin, one, I imagine that they're operating from a standpoint of fear and uncertainty in that moment in time. But I also don't take it personal, and I'm really, really quick to overlook and forgive on the other spot. One of the things that I've learned, another one of my cliches, is that happiness is having a short memory. Mm-hmm. And I've carried that through, so it doesn't feel like I've been doing this for over 40 years. I mean, every day feels fresh, and I'm not carrying any of those things that I think weigh me down. Because like we said, this too shall pass. And I always think that there's going to be something better on the other side of it. And I also believe from a faith perspective that everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say, so, you know, I just will leave anything that I don't understand, anything that's perplexing as an open-ended question, you know, in terms of, you know, what's the good that's going to come out of this, instead of just assuming it's bad. So that's me.
Love that framework. And I mean, yeah, the life experience and the business experience and all of this wisdom that you've accrued over the last 40 years. I mean, maybe if you haven't made massive reinventions, it does sound like you're constantly tweaking and you're constantly refocusing the lens and you're making minor reinventions to stay nimble. And I love that. Talk to me just a little bit about the structure of your day. You know, I think some people listening might go, man, I wish I was listening to three books on Audible or reading 3 books a week. Is that something you dedicate certain periods of time to? Do you read for a certain amount of time when you wake up or before bed? Or is it just something that happens throughout the day? I mean, what is your approach to kind of a daily plan?
Primarily, it's first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. As I'm getting ready for work, I'll be listening to things. I certainly make time to make sure that I'm apprised on what's going on in the world and the news. Mm-hmm. But I also do this prior to bed. There's important for me to have kind of an unwind period of time to help ensure a restful night of sleep. So I will probably start this process an hour or two before I actually go to bed. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of times that I find myself having to go back and rewind chapters,
yeah,
because it was also great in terms of helping to enable me and go to sleep in the evening, and I'll go back and listen to certain passages over and over again. But you know, that's so for my structure, I always start or go to bed also by making sure that I'm aware of what commitments, obligations, and what key objectives I'm going to be focusing on the next day. Mm. You know, and then I put together my to-do list. And I prioritize that list. You know, right now, I'm just going to hold this up because I've gone old school. I had, you know, wink walls in my office,
yeah,
where typically headquartered, where I could write things up on it. So I just have a little portable whiteboard here that sits next to my desk, and I'm
beautiful,
putting thoughts down as they occur to me. And, you know, I'm constantly updating my priorities. And something else, by the way, that I just want to say on the productivity front.
Yeah.
I heard something because I've never been diagnosed as having ADD,
uh-huh,
but I'm pretty sure I have a wicked case of it. However, I heard something, and what I'm doing now is I will set an alarm, a timer for 25 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And I will do these 25 minute agile sprints in which I'm going to choose that thing that, you know, either I'm putting off or that's just so important for me to take care of. And I will just make sure that for that 25 minutes, I discipline myself, no email, no calls, no distractions. And I just knock that thing out. And it's amazing how much I can get done just in one of these 25 minute sprints. Seems to make a big difference for me.
Oh, absolutely.
Just repeat them where I have approximately 8 to 10 of those a day that I'm doing. And then I have to fill everything else in. You know, Harvard Business Review once made a study on time management, and what I can recall from it had to do with the fact that one should really not schedule more than 50% of their day. You know, we like to say in franchising circles, you know, that we want to be working. We don't want to be working in our businesses. We want to be working on our businesses. So that 50%, which typically and frankly, you know, my kids are all grown up and I've got grandkids, so I have a lot more affordable time. So I might put in a longer work day than most people do, but again, it doesn't feel like work, you know, and I might sit right in front of that TV set I'm binge watching one of my favorite streaming shows. But I'm also being very productive during those periods of time. And I'm a terrible multitasker, by the way, so I'm not always getting many of the plot points. But I always go back and reread my work and make sure that it's right where it needs to be before I release it.
I love that. That 25 minute timer is brilliant, you know, and it's fascinating because at first glance, that doesn't sound like a lot of time, but 25 minutes of focused, deep, intentional, purposeful work. You can get a ton done because normally our 25 minutes is probably only, you know, 10 minutes of actual work. And the rest of it is we're going to every ding and buzz and email and everything else is going on. So no, absolutely love that. Last thing, I'm a stickler for preparation. And as I started doing more work in the franchising space, I devoured your book. Absolutely loved it. Talk to me a little bit about your book and where folks can get it. Cause I certainly recommend, there's stuff that even if you're not in the franchise or franchisee world, there's principles of high utility that can be applied to just about any area of life. So where can folks pick up your book? And then we'll put a big bow tie on this. And this has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Keith.
Thank you. I think the book that you're referring to is The Franchise Book of Mentors.
Yes, that was it.
And I'm embarrassed to take claim of it being my book, you know, because I went ahead and I structured questions and I reached out to my incredible network of some of the top franchisors. And it's probably as much or more their book than it is mine. It's called the Franchise Book of Mentors. 100% of the proceeds go to the VetFran program to basically help veterans that, you know, have come back from their service and are looking for opportunities. And it's also helping with, you know, all the different programs that they may need to basically come back into, you know, the world they left behind. So I feel like it's a really, really important thing. So all intents and purposes, you know, just look at it as you're doing something great for veterans by buying this book. It can be found at franchisebookofmentors.com. And I also have my annual franchise sales index report coming out.
Oh, nice. It'll
be coming out this next week. So franchisesalesindex.com. I'll be able to also take you to the landing page for that. And for your listeners, I'm just keith@frankconnect.com. If anybody would ever like to reach out and just converse, happy to do so.
Awesome, man. Well, I can't thank you enough for your friendship, for your mentorship, for your leadership. You've been a tremendous resource for me. I appreciate you immensely. Any parting words you want to leave with folks? And then we'll say our goodbyes, my friend.
Yeah, you know, life is such a blessing just to get up every single day and just, you know, take the time to appreciate one another. It's a great time to reach out to friends and loved ones to see how they're doing and just to let them know what a difference they make have made in your life. Is, you know, you've just mentioned that and it goes so far because right now people are looking for a beacon and they could use just a little love, a little caring, a little enthusiasm right now. So.
Absolutely. Well said, my friend. Well, thank you so much. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Same to you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Well, that's it for us. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. For more killer free content, make sure you check out allensteinjr.com/free. Join me at Allenstein Jr. on all major social platforms. and subscribe to my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. I look forward to helping you raise your game.